Gang, the coronavirus has proven that it's going to be here for a while. The nasal swab tests are hard to get and very expensive. Well, our friends at ProResults are doing rapid COVID-19 antibody testing to let you know if you have had the virus. They take cash or credit, no insurance needed, no doctor appointment required, and you get your results in 15 minutes. Tell them you heard about them on How Did I Get Here and receive 15% off of your tests. Just go to ProResultsAustin.com/HDIGH or follow the link in the text of this podcast for 15% off antibody testing for COVID-19.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Alright, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host, welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week. I hope you're safe, you're healthy, you're sane, you're hanging in there. This is nuts, man. Who knows when the world is going to go back to normal, or at least our world. I know some of the world has gone back to normal. I know they're going to soccer games and stuff in New Zealand, so that's pretty exciting for them. Things here, a little different. People fighting over they don't want to be wearing masks. They don't care. They're having fights in grocery stores, throwing chicken at people. It's nuts, man. Anyway, I hope you're doing well with all of this. I hope you're staying safe and sane. Really. I have a great show for you guys today. Tim Nelson from Australian pop band Cub Sport is my guest on the show today. We have a fantastic conversation. Fantastic. I mean, Tim is a great person and a fantastic artist. Cub Sport is a really great band. They have a brand new record coming out called Like Nirvana on July 24th. They were actually supposed to be here in Austin performing at Stubbs in May, and they were not able to do that because of this coronavirus and because of everything being canceled. So I talked to Tim the other day, well, more like a month ago, about this new record, about Tim's experience growing up in religion and also knowing that he was himself gay. And then having to sort of come to terms with that after learning that it was bad. Kind of the same as the conversation I had with Drent the other day. Anyway, Tim is a beautiful person, and Cub Sport is a fantastic band, and we have a really, really great conversation. This new record, Like Nirvana, is fantastic. I think you're all going to like it. You can find them at cubsport.com. Like Nirvana drops on July 24th. And without further ado, gang, please enjoy my conversation with this amazingly talented person, Tim Nelson, from the band Cub Sport. Let's get down.
I used to hate these mismatched houses, now they make me smile. A silver sunset on these hills makes me feel like I'm high. Thought it was hell, the sound of cars always driving by. But I don't mind it for as long as you and I can hide. Cause there's
got my notes.
Nice.
Are you an early riser?
Not really at the moment. I have been my whole life. And then during this pandemic, everything's kind of changed and I'm staying up later and waking up later.
Yeah. I think there's the different people. I've been waking up earlier, which is weirder. Like I'm waking up at like 4 in the morning.
Oh, wow. That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's terrible. It in one way, it's kind of cool because I have the morning to just kind of like cruise around and, you know, no one's fucking with you yet.
Mm-hmm.
Your album and your music is fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm also blown away by your story. I have so much to talk to you about, but I want to start here. You were supposed to be here like a week and a half ago in my town in Austin, Texas, playing at Stubbs.
Yeah, I know. It's quite sad to, I guess, to have had to cancel so much stuff this year. But like, I feel like everything's happening for a reason. And I think, like, given the revolution that's, like, upon us, it feels like it, even if the pandemic wasn't happening, it probably wouldn't be the right time to be touring anyway.
It does feel, it feels weird, doesn't it?
Mm.
Something about, I mean, how much do you identify, from what I understand, you lived in the closet and in your own head for a long time. How do you identify in some way with this?
I don't think I could say that I really identify with it. I've definitely had, like, my own struggles. I guess, like, we've grown up in a society that has been racist for all along, but it has also been homophobic. Homophobia is much less of an issue here in Australia than racism is. So every minority knows what it feels like to be oppressed, I have no idea what people of color have gone through, really. Like, I, as far as, like, minorities and oppressed people, being a gay white person is kind of, like, the easiest it can get as being a minority.
I guess there's no way to be a closeted black person.
No.
So the racial issues in Australia are, I was reading a little bit about that today, and it's also a similar situation there.
Yeah, it's just systematic racism where the structure of our laws and society are geared to advantage white people and disadvantage people of color. So it's the same. It's a reflection of the systems of America as well. And I think that myself, along with a lot of people right now, are really, like, waking up to the importance of it and how it's our responsibility to be active in dismantling this, since it's white people who put it in place. It's our responsibility to to now take it apart and create a world where there's space for everybody.
Unity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How old are you?
I am 29.
Oh, really? So you've been at this music thing for a long time.
Yeah, we've been, as Cub Sport, like, we released our first single in 2011, but we were playing music together for a couple of years before that as well.
Yeah. So that's, so since you were, like, in your late teens?
Yeah. Well, I started writing songs when I was in high school. So it's like, I've been, like, writing music and doing music for a really long time now.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you find music, or how did music find you? What made you want to write?
Well, I started piano lessons when I was quite young. Mum used to play the piano at home a lot, and I, like, loved that. I remember, like, running around in the lounge room while she would play, like, kind of, like, ragtime piano pieces and stuff. And that was really inspiring and exciting for me, and so I started piano lessons when I was, like, 6 or 7.
Oh, wow. Did you ask for them?
I can't really remember.
Okay.
I think that I might have said that I wanted to play piano, and Mum was like, well, you could get lessons.
Okay.
But I had a really amazing piano teacher, Mrs. Kelly, and she would run, like, little composition competitions and that sort of thing. Yeah. So right from when I was, like, 7 or 8 or something, I would be, like, starting to write my own music on piano as part of these little competitions. And I've kind of kept going throughout my whole life. When I was around 14, I started singing as well. And then over the years, I've kind of become more of a singer and less of a pianist.
Okay. Do you have one behind you? Isn't that a piano back there?
Yeah, that's the piano that I grew up learning.
That's the one.
Yeah, mum said that I could have it in my little studio for a bit, but I don't know if she'll ever get it back now.
Oh, yeah, I know that feeling. There's mine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I take all the stuff off of it because I like the sound. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Have it like echo through the house. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like sitting down, something completely different, even like a Rhodes or a Whirly, but definitely different from any kind of like non-acoustic piano. There's something so different about sitting down and making that sound with your fingers coming out in front of you from hammers hitting a string.
Yeah, it's actually like magic.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Musical instruments, electronic instruments are all fucking awesome as well, but there is something magical about that piano, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Were you writing words for those songs, or what kind of songs were they?
It was mainly just instrumental things. Like I couldn't remember how any of it went now. I'd imagine it would be like some sort of melodic line in the right hand and like some sort of chord in the left hand or something, okay. But I can't really remember.
So when did you, your mom taught piano or played piano? She played piano. Okay. What did she do? Were your parents together?
Yeah.
Okay.
What
did they do? What do your parents do?
My dad was an orthodontist, and my mom was a pastor.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
So what kind of pastor?
She worked in the missions department. So it was a lot of like overseas outreach and that sort of thing.
What denomination?
Pentecostal Christian.
Is that a pretty heavy?
Yeah, it's I just thought it was normal growing up, and then now I like really something different, but it's like it's the type. Well, I don't really know like my different types of Christianity that well, but from what I've gathered and from my experience, it's like the smoke machines and the lights and like,
oh,
I would try and make it like a rock concert. And yeah, it wasn't really my vibe, as I've like really come to learn over the years.
What's the trip in the Pentecostal thing? Is there a lot of judgment being laid on you and you shall not, and this kind of thing is bad and you're going to go to hell? And
it was very, it was like a very homophobic, like conservatism was everything in that world. And I guess I grew up kind of holding all of those views and values that go along with that. I was very homophobic, which got like really confusing as I started to realize that I was attracted to men. And so there's a lot of self-loathing and a lot of denial. And I think I felt like if I was outspoken about like being against that, and if I was like outwardly homophobic, then people wouldn't suspect that I was gay. And it's like, I feel like a lot of people fall into that position in trying to run from who they are.
Yeah. It's funny, Tim, that you say that, because that, I feel like that self-loathing manifests itself lyrically in songs. Sorry, I made some notes. In songs like Drive, where you're professing your love, but then you're saying like, I don't even know if I'm worthy of yours. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you've been working really hard on, to be accepting of that goodness without rejecting it because you don't think you're deserving?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's such a constant journey. And I think like being at a place when I was 25 where I could even say out loud and like tell my family,
yeah,
I'm gay, I'm in love with Sam, my now husband. That was like a huge step. And then there was, I remember when I first came out, I was like, well, I'm not like regular gays. Like I'm like, I think I kind of prided myself on appearing to be like more straight than like a lot of other gays or something. And that was like still that deep down, that internalized homophobia. And then there was like more self-acceptance for like who I really am and how I really want to express myself. And it's been this journey of like feeling all right with that. And then like genuinely starting to feel proud and starting to like love who I am and love that side of myself. But I think deep down, like it does take a while to kind of create those new paths in your subconscious where your response is like, yeah, like I'm deserving, like I'm worthy. Whereas I think deep down there's something that's like, I don't really deserve this or something. And so I think that that's kind of been something throughout a few of my songs, yeah, about my like situation with Sam and being in love. It's like do I even deserve this?
Yeah, there's this thing that happens lyrically where you're like, I'm willing to give you all of it and every part of myself, but I don't think I deserve you, man. There's a chance, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, so when you came out, how did your parents take it? Like, how did your mom take it?
They were really good. Like, it wasn't like immediate, but like the total acceptance and like ease with the situation. But it was really quick. It was basically immediate. But there were questions like, because I said that I was in love with Sam. It's like, but like sexually as well, it's kind of just like this like last bit of hope. Yeah. That I think like a lot of the older generation have in their minds like that queer people like can't have families and like all of these things that like aren't actually
right
reality.
Right.
I know that like their like greatest experience in life, they say, was like having us kids and like getting to know us and like sharing our lives together or whatever, and that they didn't want me to miss out on that. It's like,
you don't have to.
I don't have to.
Real quick, did your dad do your teeth?
He did. But I didn't wear my retainers, and so they're pretty much back to where they started. But I don't, now looking back, I'm like, I had Invisalign, and like my teeth were already like really good before that. And now I'm like, I kind of like slightly crooked teeth that look a bit more unique. I don't know. It's funny that
after you said your dad was an orthodontist, that's like my vision went to your teeth. <Yeah. laughs> and my thought was, he's got a nice set of choppers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry. So when you got in high school, did you start bands and stuff or?
Yeah, I had like a couple of like little bands. I had a best friend called Zach through middle school, and we we started like a little band, and I'd like play piano or keyboard and he played guitar, and we had another friend who played like bass and then a drummer. I think we wrote one song and then, but we were like 13 or 14 or something, so didn't really have much to do with it. And then it was when I got out of school that I started kind of putting together a band to play shows as Tim Nelson. And then after a couple of years, when we like recorded some music that we were really proud of, that we wanted to kind of like launch officially, we launched our band as Cub Scouts.
Yeah. And then the Cub Scouts had a problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm really grateful for now, because I feel like Cub Sport is a better band name to like grow up with than Cub Scouts.
Yeah. Were you a Cub Scout?
No, I wasn't.
That seems like a Christian move, though.
Yeah. No, I was never part of the Scouts.
Were your parents, was your, at least your mom, was she worried about the music stuff? I mean, did they go like, Tim, you got to go into something that's going to help you out in the future. Did they have that talk with you?
No, they've always been like really supportive of me, like doing whatever I want to do. And they have been like that. I've got three siblings.
Okay.
I'm the youngest. And like my sister's a doctor, my brother's a physio, and my other brother is an audiologist.
Oh,
and
wow.
I decided for myself that I wanted to be an orthodontist like Dad. So I went to uni and I did the first couple of years of dentistry, and I really didn't like it. I don't know why it took me so long to like realize that if I really didn't enjoy it while I was studying it, I probably wasn't going to enjoy the job either. But yeah, when we launched our band as Cub Scouts, we got our first single, Evie, on national radio here in Australia.
How did that happen?
I think we were just really fortunate. We knew a guy who like did freelance PR and radio plugging, who did a really cheap campaign for us. And Triple J, our like youth national broadcaster here, were into the song, and it got added to rotation, and they played it quite a lot. And really quickly we had like booking agents and managers and interest from labels and that sort of thing.
The Sharks.
Yeah.
They start coming out as soon as stuff starts going good. Like, I've always loved you, Tim. You know, I want to be in the Tim Nelson business.
But yeah, we got offered some tours on the back of that. And because dentistry is like a really full-on program, it was either, I was going to either have to like turn down the tours or basically like quit uni. So I was able to defer uni for 2 years where I could like hold my place in the course and go back if I wanted. But I realized that like once I started giving more of my time to music, and like when I got to start playing shows in other cities and that sort of thing, that like that was what really made me happy and really made me excited. And so it was kind of a no-brainer when it came time to either like go back to uni or just stop touring and kind of put Cub Sport as like a second priority or whatever. So I ended up quitting uni altogether, and then I was working as a dental assistant and a lab technician for years at the same time as doing Cub Sport. So it was like, I think that being a dental assistant is like maybe one of the most unenjoyable jobs that you can do. Like,
is that like the prepping and having to put the hands in the mouth and all that stuff?
Yeah.
I would
do like adjustments on braces, like take off the O-rings and like put in the new wire and tie it in. And the funny thing is that Sam also came to dental school. He was doing dental therapy, which is a 3-year course rather than 5 years. And he managed to do a year of touring and finish his degree. So then he was the dental therapist at my dad's orthodontic practice. And so sometimes I would assist Sam when he was like taking people's braces off and like gluing in appliances. And it's just so funny. My mum was the practice manager. My dad was one of the orthodontists there. Sam was the dental therapist. And I like made retainers and worked as a dental assistant. And like that whole time, Sam and I were like in love, but like both deep in the closet. And we were like there with my parents, like all together all the time. It was just kind of just like it was just a very unique situation, I think.
To say the least, man. That sounds like a powder keg just waiting to like, you know, everyone freak out.
Yeah.
So how long have you and Sam been together?
We got together properly in 2016.
Okay.
We were on tour in the States through June of 2016, and we had a day off in Denver that coincided with Denver Pride. And it was just after the shootings in Orlando.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
There was such a sense of unity. I think there always is at Pride, but it was like our first one that we'd ever been to. And I think the queer community were like really like feeling like what had been happening. And there was just a real sense of belonging, and like there was no feelings of like being out of place or feeling self-conscious or anything. And I think that being there and like seeing all of these people just like unashamedly living their truth and being themselves and being surrounded by other people who love and support them was kind of like the last little push, I think, to be like, God, like what are we doing? Like we're like wasting our lives not being our true selves and like not enjoying like who we are. So probably another week after that, we played our last show of the North American tour in Vancouver. And then we were like partying for the end of tour. And I think that like that was kind of the catalyst to having this conversation that Sam and I have been putting off for basically like 8 years at that point, because
Whoa.
we first like got together when we were 17, and then after like being together for a year, we decided that it would be better and like easier for both of us and our families and everything if we just like cut it off and we were just friends and we tried to find girlfriends and I guess live out the model that we grew up with of like getting married to a woman and like having kids or whatever. And yeah. So we had the conversation that night and Sam said to me, I don't want this to ruin our friendship, but I'm in love with you and I want us to be together. And I was like, yep, I'm the same. And then we flew back to Australia a few days later and we both came out to our parents that week. And then, yeah, I think we got engaged like a year later. So it was really like once we had kind of like overcome that first hurdle, it really felt like we moved quickly, because I think we had so many years of like
Right.
deep down knowing that was like what we both wanted.
Right.
Even though we didn't speak about it for so long.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. So Tim, let's go back. You put out that single that got picked up by the radio station. That was a national radio station is what you're saying, right?
Mm.
Okay. And then you headed out on tour.
Mm-hmm.
What did that look like? Were you in a van? Had you ever toured?
I had never toured before. It was kind of a mixture of vans and flying in Australia.
Right, it's huge. And there's, yeah.
Yeah. And there aren't that many cities to play in. So it's like, we had a van for some Sydney shows, which is like a 12-hour drive from Brisbane. And I remember after playing a show in Sydney once, we jumped straight in the van after we played and started driving up to Brisbane. And the uni, like the college that Sam and I went to, was at the Gold Coast, which is about an hour south of Brisbane. And so we were, we dropped Sam off at uni to do an exam, like after driving overnight from the show the night before. Jesus. And Sam was like lying down on the floor of the van with a torch, like studying for this exam. Then we dropped him off and continued on to Brisbane. And it's like that was what that whole year looked like for Sam, of like touring and like finishing off his degree.
What were the crowds like? Were there people, knew you guys? Were people waiting for you when you got to these? Were you playing clubs, theaters? What was the scene?
A lot of our touring was as a support act for like just various Australian bands that were like doing pretty well. And so it was our first time like playing to somewhat full rooms, because there were people there like for these other bands. It kind of took years before we really started to build our own live following. And I think that largely coincided with when we put out our debut album in 2016. It was kind of a slow, 5 years in between that time. When we put out our debut EP in 2012, it was like, I think it was number one most added to college radio, and there was like really great uptake with that. And then there was like more label interest than ever, and we like got management on at that point, because we'd been self-managed up until then. And it felt like at that point we started getting pulled in a few different directions, and then we ended up signing to a label. And then I like wrote this album that was really different to our EPs that we'd put out, and the label didn't really know what to do with it. So it was delayed. It was delayed for years. And then we like put out the first couple of singles from the album, and there was very little uptake. And it kind of felt like everyone in our team was like, all right, well, like that didn't really work, and kind of dusted their hands of it. And so we started to take it back into our own hands. And there was a song on that album called Come On Mess Me Up that we all really loved. And we're like, people need to hear this song. And it was a different song that the rest of our team wanted to be like the third single. But by that point, they were like nothing's really going to happen anyway. So like, do what you want. But the label wouldn't release funds to make a video for it. So we made a video in our lounge room with one of our friends. I think it was like $100 to hire some lights. And then the rest was just like doing what we could do. But that song really connected, and it like started getting played on the radio. And that was, it kind of felt like the first song that really like reflected who I was. And I think at that point I barely even understood like what it was about or what the message was. And I still feel like it's like revealing itself over time.
Yeah.
But releasing that song and that connecting in quite a big way, and then coming out as queer and feeling like I, for the first time, I could really like say, okay, this is who I am, and like get on stage and not have in my mind, like, be careful how you move, like be careful, like how you do anything. People might figure out that you're gay, basically. Like a lot of that fear started to go away. And it felt like that was when people really started to like understand what Cub Sport is. Like even for us ourselves, that was the point where it's like, okay, this is who we are and what we're doing. And that was when people started coming to our shows, like to see us, not the headliner. And like that was when we started selling out our own headline shows and that sort of thing.
When you came out, did you find that you all of a sudden might have elevated your position to like a position where people like the fact that you're okay with who you are and thriving and so comfortable and liberated, there's other closeted people out there that are waiting for this okay from somebody like you. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I think that, like, for me, it's always like when you see someone living their truth and being themselves and like seeing that it's like worked out all right for them, that's like, okay, I can do this too. It's like when you see someone else doing it, it gives you permission. And so I feel like that's definitely, that's definitely part of like what we aim to do, like as a band, is to, I guess, like liberate other people and hopefully like be a part of their journey to like self-acceptance and living their truth.
Whatever feeling it was that you and Sam felt at that, at the Pride Festival in Denver, that's what you want to provide to people.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, a safe place.
Yeah,
to be yourself. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. It really is, man. I'm moved by it. So, all right. So, when you live in Australia, I'm asking. I'm a musician too. There's a lot of musicians that listen to the show. And I know that there's like very few of us that have, I've never been, and I've never toured there, but I have a lot of friends that have, and they do talk about like the distances, because like when you came to the United States, were you like, what do you mean it's only, you know, an hour and a half from Philadelphia to New York City? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think touring the States is really fun for that reason, that like, you don't have to be getting on and off planes all the time. It's kind of just like load up the van, drive to the next city. There are obviously some drives, like when you make your way, because we've always done like the full loop, or like gone at least from like one coast to the other. So there are some enormous drives in there.
Oh yeah.
But I much prefer going city to city in a van than like loading all of the gear into an airport and like checking each piece in and then collecting it. Yeah.
Is it hard to make that? I mean, I think about it in my own terms, and I've been on labels and stuff, but nobody ever said like, hey man, we're going to pack it up and go to Australia. Is that a super costly trip for a band?
Yeah. It's, I guess, just like visas and airfares and anything to get out of Australia into another territory. It's like, it's something you have to be willing to invest in. And it's always been a priority for us to like take our music outside of Australia as well as trying to build it here.
Right. You know, what's interesting is that, I mean, you have the kind of, you have the kind of plays that major label successful pop acts have, like on your Spotify at least. Mm-hmm. Is that in America? Like you can see where all those are. Do you keep track of that?
Yeah. So America is our like next biggest market after Australia. On Apple Music, we have more listeners in America than in Australia. And it's really cool because, like, I guess without having a label, our avenues of like people discovering us, I feel like, are a little more limited, just because we don't have, I guess, like those, like that top tier network, because we're like largely doing it all ourselves.
Right.
But a lot of people who come to our shows in the States say, oh yeah, you were in my Spotify recommended, or like we just came on like whatever radio after what they were listening to, and that they like went to our profile and then saw that we were like coming to their city. And so, yeah, it's really amazing to, I guess, be building a listenership overseas and then having that convert to like people actually coming to shows.
Yeah. Has that limitation of like movement ever made you want to move somewhere else, like in Europe or New York City or something?
Yeah, for sure. I think we've spoken about like moving to the States a lot of times. We have two dogs though, Missy and Evie.
Yeah.
And they're like everything to us. And
I know that feeling.
10 and 12 now. And I feel like for as long as they're with us, I like want to be based in Brisbane. I like endure the cost and travel of like the long flights or whatever. Like once we can even travel again, I don't know when that will be.
Right.
But I think that like when that day comes, when they're no longer with us, we'll probably spend more time like overseas and like maybe move to LA for a bit or something. Like we really love being in LA.
What about LA do you like so much?
There's something, I don't know, I feel like there are so many creative people there and like so many people like pushing forward. It's like, it's quite motivating.
Yes.
And I feel like a lot of things kind of just happen, like sessions, photo shoots, like just like sure. meeting people.
Yeah.
Because everyone is kind of like in the flow and like doing their own creative thing. And there are a lot of people, like just a lot of interesting people doing similar things, I guess, or like doing related things that can be like really inspiring.
Yeah. And it's also like, I mean, obviously if you're a pop person to be in the place where the biggest stuff is being made is a good move. Mm-hmm. I know a couple of pop people here in Austin that I'm always like, why do you live here? Like, this isn't the jam for you, man. You know, not in a bad way, but it's just like, you're going to frustrate the hell out of yourself being here like this. Where do you guys make your records?
Mainly like right in this room that I'm sitting in.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think 10 of the 13 tracks on our upcoming album were recorded in here. And then one I recorded at a studio in LA. And the other two were recorded like entirely on the road. So like basically all of the instrumentation was done in tour vans and then vocals were recorded at Airbnbs like in between drives.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What studio did you work in LA? Was it one of the famous old?
There's a label out of Australia called Future Classic. It's like Flume label.
Okay. Is that where you did the Kanye song? No.
Oh no, we did that at Triple J.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
But yeah, Future Classic said that I could use some of their like studio rooms for a couple of days when I was in LA. And so I took them up on that offer and they had a Rhodes in one of the rooms. And Sam was just like playing around on the Rhodes and he like played these chords. And I had started writing some lyrics that morning. And when I like heard these chords on the Rhodes, it just like, I like felt so like excited and like, oh, as I keep playing that, like just keep playing that over and over. And then I like started to have like this song just like come really quickly. And that it ended up being the song Be Your Man that's on our album. And I think it's like, I feel like it might be like my best songwriting to date. It like feels, it just feels very timeless and feels like there's no like noise around it. It's just like so pure. Cause I feel like at the time when I wrote that, we just finished a big US tour and like really the last couple of years have felt like a nonstop sprint almost. And I think at that point I like wasn't feeling particularly settled and I just like, I wasn't feeling great. I was feeling really scattered. And then writing this song just felt like this like beam of like, just like taking like that whole storm and like putting it into this like one like clean, pure like moment of like what that emotion felt like with like without any of the noise. It was just like, this is what you're feeling. And I think I like hadn't really, I could hardly even like put my finger on what it was that was making me feel so uneasy until I like wrote this song and I felt so much more clarity on the other side of it.
That's amazing. It brought everything into focus for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How, when you said you had written some lyrics that morning, what kind of writer are you? Are you like a wake up every day and write something, or do you morning pages or sit down and make music, or?
It's kind of like, I don't have like a regular writing practice. It's usually just whenever I have like something like pop into my mind that I'll like write it into my notes. And sometimes inspiration strikes at like really unexpected times when I'm not really trying. And I think it had kind of just been one of those moments that morning where I had that. But then it was like when I heard the chords and I just started, I've heard like Caroline Polachek talk about apple sourcing, when you just kind of like make any sort of like syllables as along with the melody, and that things just seem to like come through. Yeah. And that was kind of like the process. Like when I started, like I went over to the Rhodes and started playing those chords that Sam had been playing and kind of just singing whatever. And that was when the chorus and like the chorus lyrics came through that I hadn't like written down anywhere or planned. It just felt like they like kind of came through in the moment.
Yeah. That's amazing when that happens. How much do you write with others? Like, I know you write with Sam in that way, but do you ever sit down and do like, are you the only person that writes the lyrics in Cub Sport? Sorry, I didn't mean to say Club Sport.
That's okay. I'm the only one who writes the lyrics. I do most of my writing alone. I think over the last year, like with all of the touring that we've had and then all of the promo and like all of the things that have kept our schedule so stacked, I haven't really had that much time to collaborate or do sessions with other people. Sure. 'Cause it's kind of been about writing when I end up like having some time. Right. But on our third album, I had like a bit more time to just sort of chill, and I did some more collaborations on that one. But this album kind of felt more like a diary of what the last year has felt like, as well as like when I would make links for like how I am now and like reflect back on like things that happened in my life like 10 years ago, and kind of like telling the stories and like shedding light on like the magic of like moments from like 10 years ago that I was just keeping hidden and that sort of thing. It's kind of about like my diary now and like tying it all together from like the whole journey. But there is one collaboration on our upcoming album that I wrote here in my home studio with Mallrat. And that one was like, she was like engineering the session, and it's like a co-production, which was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's being completely like self, entirely independent and self-managed. Like you're do you guys share all the duties, or what is your day like? Is it pretty brutal?
We're pretty busy. Sam does most of the management stuff. So his day is basically like just full of staying on top of emails, staying on top of me to like get all of the things that I have to have done by a certain time back and making sure that I'm like doing all of that. Like we create all of the assets and everything basically ourselves as well. Dan, our drummer, is kind of like the business manager. Like we all consult on everything, but like we have our different areas of expertise. We all have a pretty decent workload.
Yeah. It's good though that you're able to share it, that it's not just like the Tim Nelson trip. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've been in that situation and that can, I mean, I am basically like in my solo project, you know, and that's exhausting sometimes. Putting out records that way can be exhausting and doing all this stuff. How do you handle the stuff as being like a label?
We have a distribution deal. Okay. So we have distributors who service it to like ESPs and help with like the manufacturing of like physical vinyls and CDs and right. tapes and everything.
Will you make, are you going to make vinyl of like Nirvana?
Yeah, we're actually doing three different types. We're doing a picture disc that has these like flower paintings on it, a solid like red, I think it's called Cadillac Pink, but it's like the exact red that's on the album cover.
Okay.
And then we're doing a transparent, like kind of like royal blue.
Awesome.
Yeah.
When you're talking to, you have a US booking agent, right? You have a US publicist. That's who got put us together.
Yeah.
Have you been in talks? Like, are these cancellations looked at? Hey, let's look at like 2021 or sorry, this mm-hmm. is not, were you supposed to be opening for someone on this tour or was it your own tour?
This was a headline tour, the one that would have been happening right now. And yeah, we're always talking to our booking agents in every territory to see what the developments are and like, when we can move forward with rescheduling. But I think that it's just so up in the air right now.
Yeah.
And there are so many like huge things happening in the world that it kind of feels like the right thing to do is just like be patient and assess, and we'll be over there as soon as it's allowed and as soon as it's safe.
Yeah. I want to see you guys play live. That's my own personal. I really fell in love with your music, and yeah, I mean you're incredible. I don't know if I said that at the top of the thing, but sometimes I feel weird just blowing a bunch of smoke up someone's ass, because then there's people that come on that I don't. I'm like, hey, nice kick drum sound on that album, you know what I mean? But you're yeah. a tremendous, tremendous artist, and just a very the things that you're exploring on this record. I feel like asking you, how does the balance work out? Like how much of it, what's the percentage of liberation versus fear while you're committing this to tape, so to speak, as you're recording this, as you're committing to this, these thoughts that are deep inside your mind that you don't, I'm the same kind of songwriter. And I mm-hmm. sometimes it moves. Sometimes the liberation of saying it way outweighs the fear. And other times I just kind of close my eyes because I'm like, fuck, I'm just going to do it and put it out and see what happens. But like, there has to be an evolving balance of that.
Mm-hmm. For me, like writing it is really liberating. And when I wrote Confessions in particular, I was like, wow, I just,
yeah.
like I articulated a bunch of things that I didn't even know that I'd been trying to articulate, like just things that had been like weighing on me. And like, I just like, I wasn't feeling great. And I like at the, for like our previous couple of albums, the things that were scary to say, but like, I'm in love with Sam. Like that was the thing that was right. really scary. But there have been like all of these other things kind of beneath the surface that are even scarier to say. And I think it's things that I'm not alone in feeling and experiencing. And so when I do like record the, like when I get these like innermost like revelations and feelings out, it is really liberating. And it's always like a feeling of like being lighter on the other side. Like even if it's kind of like dark, like some of the like truths of the lyrics, putting that out into the world is definitely scary, like especially Confessions for me is like basically like putting myself out there like I never have before. And I don't know, I just feel like it's part of what I'm called to do, that like I think as artists and people who can kind of like channel inspiration from like I feel like a lot of what I create is beyond what I like, what I myself can create. Kind of feels like I'm like calling on like my higher self or something else that kind of like that I feel like I kind of like co-create with. But I've had a lot of people get in touch and say that I've like perfectly articulated like what they're going through that they like couldn't really put into words themselves. And I feel like being able to do that is like a huge privilege. And then being able to like make my career releasing that, and then that helping people on their own journeys, like it's really amazing. And so as like scary as it is sometimes, I'm like, this is like, it's more important than just like if it's easy for me or whatever. I don't know, it's like it's kind of just like what it has become, and I'm at peace with that. And I think that for me, like the liberation does outweigh the fear.
Yeah, there's something about, it seems like you, once you experience whatever that Bible phrase is, the truth shall set you free. Once you experience that freedom, it seems like in songs like Confessions, which I wrote down as really very intense and very, it seems like once you feel like you told this giant truth, it was like, why not go sweep everything out of the corners? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
By the way, I made you sound like a old like New York plumber or something when I said that. Sorry. So what have you been doing during the quarantine? Like, what has been your sort of day to day?
Well, I've had a good amount of interviews, and I've done a couple of podcasts, and working on like visual assets for the songs that are coming out, and kind of just a lot of planning, because we ended up moving the album because of the pandemic. And so there was a lot to kind of like restructure and
right.
A lot of decisions to make. And I've done a little bit of writing and recording as well on the days in between when I don't have anything else on, which has been really cool.
Are you a cooking person?
I do really love cooking. Sam is like an incredible cook. So when I'm in the kitchen, I'm like usually acting as his assistant. I'll just like, he'll like direct me, and I'll like give my, I'll like, yeah, chip in with like my, what flavors I'm vibing and that sort of thing. But Sam is like a really good cook. So we have been in the kitchen lots, but he steers the ship.
All right. I get that. Is there anything I'm missing? It's been great talking to you. And I'm a huge fan of yours now. I have to thank your publicist profusely for introducing me to your music, at least. And I Yeah, I'm blown away by your story, and it's been really great chatting with you. Is there anything I'm missing? I'm sure there's a lot I'm missing, but is there anything that you want to cover before we?
No, that we go is to me. Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you. I hope that you guys make it back through Austin sooner than later, and that I'm not playing, and I'd love to meet you in person and meet the rest of the band and stuff, and see you play live. Yeah.
That sounds great. We'll let you know when we're back in Austin.
Please do. Tim, it really has been a pleasure. You're a tremendous artist. People can find you guys at Club Sport. I have this thing in a band. I'm in a band, and there's this outfit that one of the guys wore one time, and somebody called them Club Casual. And so that's, I say it so much. Sorry. You can find them at cubsport.com. Their new album, Like Nirvana, drops July 24th. There are singles out now, including Drive, I Don't Feel Like I'm Changing, and Confessing, and also three full studio albums and four EPs that are definitely worth checking out.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Have a great, great day.
You too.
See you.
Bye. Bye.
What a wonderful conversation with Tim Nelson from Australia's Cub Sport. Their brand new album, Like Nirvana, drops July 24th. Go to cubsport.com for all of your Cub Sport needs. What a great, great conversation. I need to correct myself because the song, I talked about a song and I referred to it as I Don't Feel Like I'm Changing, but it's actually called I Feel Like I'm Changing. I just wrote it down in my notes wrong. Sometimes that happens. I'm sorry, Tim. What an amazing band. What an amazing story. Tim is just a beautiful person and I really enjoyed talking to him. I hope that you guys all check out Cub Sport, check out their music. This song, I Feel Like I'm Changing, is beautiful. I want to thank Tim Nelson for taking the time to talk to me. That was a great, great conversation. Enjoy it. Share it with your friends. Check them out at cubsport.com. And don't forget, gang, when you're checking out cubsport.com, you can always subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New shows all the time. It's raining shows, all right? Enjoy the rest of this song, I Feel Like I'm Changing, by Cub Sport. And go check them out at cubsport.com and get their album, Like Nirvana, out July 24th. Thanks for listening to the show. Have a great day. Let's get down. Makes me feel like I'm